At Seek Safely, it's our mission to empower seekers to have a safe and meaningful self-improvement journey.
Why do we care? Seeking to be your best self is an amazing, beautiful human impulse that has led us to create art, invent technology, tell amazing stories, and reach the moon.
But we saw the dark side of self-help in 2009 when a recklessly run self-improvement retreat led to the death of three people, including my sister, Kirby Brown.
We want people to seek, to dream their big dreams and chase their beautiful goals. But we want to make sure they're safe along the way.
This podcast is about education and empowerment and getting real about the promises and problems of self-help.
We talk with people who understand and care about the self-help industry and everyone it touches.
I'm Jean Brown.
I'm Dr. Glenn Patrick Doyle.
And this is the Seek Safely podcast. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Seek Safely podcast. I am Jean Brown, and I'm here with my co-host, Dr. Glenn Patrick Doyle. What's up, Dr. Doyle?
That's me. I'm Dr. Glenn Patrick Doyle. Not to be confused with Glennon Doyle.
Exactly. And in my recording space, I will just mention my other co-host over here is the dog Makushla, and she's a little cranky. So you might hear some little errant dog whines in the background. I promise I'm not doing anything to her. I just gave her a butter snack, in fact. So she should be really happy right now.
Makushla. That's quite a name for a dog. That's a million dollar baby, right?
It is a Gaelic name.
It is a Gaelic name. Is that, but correct me if I'm wrong, in the movie Million Dollar Baby, that was Clint Eastwood's nickname for Hilary Swank. Did I make this movie up?
No. I remember that movie. I don't know if I saw it.
It was this big emotional, well, I won't spoil it, but it was this big. So
boxing, right? She was a boxer.
Yeah, and then it takes a real swerve at the very end. But the point is that throughout the movie, Clint Eastwood calls her Makushla, and she never knows what it means. And at the very end of the movie, he tells her what it means. It means family, blood, right?
Yeah, it's like blood of my blood or bone of my bone kind of thing. Yeah. Makushla Makhri, yeah.
If you guys are listening to this podcast, don't tweet Jean the end of that movie. Let's go ahead and let Jean watch Million Dollar Baby and experience the magic of that ending. Oof, it's rough.
Oh, boy.
It's rough.
Okay.
Anyway.
All right. So, yes.
I would like to bypass the pain of the end of Million Dollar Baby by you bypassed it by not watching it.
Yes, I just completely skipped it.
What should we talk about during this podcast, Jean?
Yeah, so we are going to be talking about bypassing. I think a number of our listeners have probably gotten into a lot of other content that is somewhat critical of the self-help world. And people may have heard this term bypassing. I think people are most familiar with the term spiritual bypassing in particular. But yeah, in general, Dr. Glenn, why don't you go ahead and define what we mean by bypassing? I think sometimes these terms get a little confused.
So bypassing has been on my mind for a minute. As you may or may not know, I tweet sometimes. And something that was recently discussed on the website formerly known as Twitter was what I call bypassing bullshit. So as you know, I work mostly with folks who have had very bad things happen to them and who are now working their trauma recovery, often their addiction recovery alongside it. And as we work our trauma recovery, we very often discover that we have internalized certain BS. I call it BS. It's belief systems. It's the other kind of BS too. But we come to believe sometimes that because bad things have happened to us and the perpetrator of those bad things is not going to pay for it because they're out of our lives, they're gone, they're not going to pay, they're not going to be held accountable, that we somehow have to pay for it with pain, with self-injury, with self-sabotage. It's this, like anybody who has struggled through trauma probably knows what I'm talking about here. It doesn't make any sense on a rational level. But we get it in our heads that if we were to not hurt ourselves or not sabotage ourselves, that means everyone gets off the hook and we can't have that. Here's the thing. Hurting ourselves doesn't actually hold anybody accountable. Like, hurting ourselves doesn't actually fix or heal anything. And so I wrote a tweet that called it bypassing bullshit. And so I got some questions about this. Like, what does that mean, bypassing bullshit? When we try and bypass something, we are actually trying to avoid something. That's what a bypass is. When somebody gets a heart bypass, they're having a surgical procedure that allows them to avoid a blockage in an artery, right? When a traffic bypass is constructed, it's something looking to avoid a congested area or something like that. So bypassing equals avoidance. I think about this a lot because trauma survivors have a lot to avoid. Like, the folks that I work with have a lot to avoid. We've had very bad things happen to us. We often deal with a lot of residual pain and trauma responses. So we tend to be particularly vulnerable to, I'm going to call them pitches, that include bypassing as a piece of the puzzle, because, man, there are various types of bypassing. Like, you mentioned spiritual bypassing. I happen to think there's such a thing as emotional bypassing and trauma bypassing. We're going to talk in a few minutes about something I call labor bypassing. But the thing that all these things have in common is we're trying to avoid something. And avoidance, by the way, avoidance is not a reflection of character. It's not a reflection of our morality. Avoidance is not necessarily indicative of cowardice. Avoidance is actually a great big symptom constellation of post-traumatic disorders. It is a trauma response. And as I've said over and over again, trauma responses are not choices. They are nervous system reflexes. So when we talk about avoidance, we're not talking about, somebody's a coward. We're not necessarily even talking about someone's making a choice.
Well, when you think about it, a lot of avoidance, it's protective, right? It's a form of self-protection. So there's nothing cowardly in that. I think it's very normal. And, I think it's very human to try to avoid things that cause pain, right? The problem is when that avoidance just delays the inevitable. There's something that you're going to have to face no matter what, and avoiding it is just going to keep causing you problems. But yeah, I agree. I think it's important for us to note that there's nothing wrong in that impulse to avoid.
I will see that, and I will take you a step further. I'll see that, and I'll raise you. Avoidance is the smart thing, not always. Another tweet that I just wrote, something to the tune of, look, when a trauma survivor is immersed in a triggering environment, it's like an alcoholic in a bar. When we have a reaction to the toxic environment around us, again, it's not necessarily really that we're making a choice, like we're experiencing a reflex. So doesn't it kind of make sense to avoid the bar if we're an alcoholic, if we can? To avoid the triggering environment, if we can, when we are recovering from trauma. And the caveat there is that, well, no, we can't always avoid triggers. And I always get a lot of, whenever I discuss this in public, I always get a lot of pushback to the tune of, like, you're just teaching people to avoid their triggers. No, I think it's smart to avoid triggers while we're building our skill set, if we can, right? I think it's certainly smart to manage our exposure to triggers, if we can. And there are times and places when avoidance is absolutely the smart move. That's why our nervous system does it. That's why we have it's in trauma psychology, we call it the flight trauma response, the flee trauma response, get out of there. Facing the trigger, when we were cave people, facing the trigger of there being a saber-toothed tiger, there's no virtue to sitting there and hanging out with the saber-toothed tiger. Get out of there. Avoid it.
Right. Exactly.
So we're not down on avoidance. What we are kind of down on is the intentional promise that this technique or this philosophy or this tool, whatever, will allow you to avoid it with no consequences. Mm-hmm. That's really where these things become problematic.
Right. And I think one of the things too that like an interesting distinction. So of course, we're talking about this in the context of the self-help industry. So it's not just that people are kind of choosing to bypass or choosing to avoid things on their own. They're actually being sold a thought system that is specifically going to help them do this bypassing, or they're being told to use certain types of bypassing to various ends, right, for various purposes. But I think that that adds another, a whole other layer on it when it's not just the person doing it themselves, somebody else is actually kind of telling them or encouraging them to do it.
You bet. This is often packaged as, and you're going to notice themes that are very familiar from certain self-help philosophies and personalities that start to recur, but this is often packaged as, so you've heard it said that you have to do this really difficult thing to grow, but that's a myth. Mm-hmm. That is a myth. Right. That is big whatever wants you doing that suffering. I have this breakthrough that will allow you to avoid all that suffering and get the same result, that you don't actually have to do this tough work. I can think of an early example of this. So my pal Tony Robbins, I say pal in quotes, who sadly did not invite me on his podcast, as it turns out. No, I mean Tony Robbins in the Personal Power program talks about this time that he was on TV. So Tony Robbins, back in the early days, he used to go on TV and cure people, cure people of phobias in like 5 minutes. And he would use his own techniques and some NLP techniques and whatever, and appear to cure people in 5 minutes. But anyway, he was talking about, there used to be a, it's not really a therapy technique, but it's a personal change technique called temporal tapping. Have you ever heard of temporal tapping?
You know, I have heard the term, but I do not remember what it means.
It's this thing, this idea that, so you would call to mind something that you'd wanted to stop doing, right? And he gives the example of, like, so this guy was afraid of snakes. And he was, okay, now think about snakes. And then they would, you know, so the temporal part of the head is on that mm-hmm. side of your head. So this therapist mm-hmm. or whomever. So, okay, think about snakes, and then kind of go bam, 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 like wham, wham, wham on the side of his head. Like, think about the snakes, bam, 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 think about the snakes. It was a form of aversive conditioning. And he was trying to eradicate this phobia of snakes. And the punchline of this story is that the therapist was doing the temporal tapping and smacking this poor guy on the side of the head as he was thinking about snakes. It didn't work. It didn't work. So Tony came along. Of course, Tony is the hero in the story, and Tony came along and actually delved into like what that fear of snakes was about. And the guy had to kind of actually talk about, like, you know, how that fear of snakes came to be and what he actually associates with snakes, not just that snakes are aversive to him. And in doing that, he was able to resolve this phobia. What Tony was doing was giving us an example of bypassing. Ironically, he was not the one doing the bypassing. It was the guy with the temporal tapping. Because with his kind of gimmicky technique of bam, 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 slapping him on the side of the head when we thought about snakes, he was trying to bypass the emotional work of figuring out what that phobia was all about and kind of resolving what that phobia was all about. I mean, it's a small example, kind of a small scale example. But the idea of bypassing has been entrenched in kind of self-help circles for a really long time. You and I were talking right before we started recording that maybe the motherload of bypassing, spiritual and otherwise, is our favorite concept, the law of attraction.
Mm-hmm.
Right? The good old secret, right?
Yeah.
So you said you primarily think about the secret, the law of attraction, as kind of a spiritual bypass.
Yeah. So I think we can define exactly what's meant by spiritual bypassing. So spiritual bypassing, it's not you're bypassing spiritual beliefs. It's that you're using some spiritual belief to do the bypassing for you. So we see this a lot it happens in Christianity. Like I mentioned the phrase I always love to hear as a Catholic kid growing up, let go and let God. So this, or, you know, like everything happens for a reason. God has a plan. Mm.
God won't give you any more than you can handle. That was one of my favorites.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a good one. That's a good one. So in other words, when things are shit, it's a way to say, okay, you know, don't worry too much and don't lose faith. Don't lose faith because God has a plan. God won't give you more than you can handle. God will show you the way. So, you know, something will open up for you. And I think it's, you know, in some respects, it's okay to hold some of these beliefs. They can be comforting to us sometimes when we're facing difficult situations. So I don't just want to say that all of this type of bypassing is bad, but I think sometimes people use these types of thoughts and this type of bypassing to just completely ignore and avoid reality that they might just have to face. So yes, we were talking about the law of attraction. I think that's relevant in spiritual bypassing because people do tend to develop this concept of the law of attraction in such a way that it does become like almost a spiritual belief system. It really becomes a belief system for them. And so then, you know, we see it play out in a lot of different ways. You were talking about the, you know, the idea of manifesting, which we'll get into a little more in a bit.
Your favorite concept.
Yes, I love manifesting.
You love it.
But then the other side of the law of attraction is the whole idea that, you know, any experience that you're having, anything that you're dealing with, any trouble or difficulty that you're encountering in your life, well, it's the result of your own thoughts. It's the result of thought patterns that you had. So if you're not successful in your business, well, obviously, it's because there's some doubt that you're holding on to, and that's keeping you from what you want to actually actualize and manifest in your life. It's keeping you from the success because you're not believing in the success strong enough. You're holding on to some doubts. And then, of course, you know, the other way that we see this being used is that people will use it to ignore all sorts of realities, especially ones that happen for people who aren't white, aren't privileged, the realities that people face as a result of things that they have absolutely no control over will sometimes be bypassed by these law of attraction beliefs. So if you are poor and you're struggling, well, that's your own that's your own fault. It has nothing to do with circumstances that you were born into. It has nothing to do with economic and social realities that are far beyond your one little life. There, it's all just because of your beliefs.
Right.
So, yeah, this is a very egregious use of spiritual bypassing, in my opinion.
Well, it bypasses the necessity of, one, acknowledging some really ugly truths. Mm-hmm. About our, you know, our world, our culture, other people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, I think about this every time a movement gets afoot where a subset of people decide that their candidate for office is chosen by God.
Mm.
Right? Well, God has just chosen. That's God. I've seen a vision, and God wants whomever to be president or whatnot. Is bypassing the reality that there are some ugly reasons why people might vote one way or vote mm-hmm. another way. So in some ways, you know, the law of attraction specifically, yeah, it bypasses certain ugly realities about the world and having to cope with those and having to change those.
Right. And it puts all of the onus on the individual.
You bet.
When the reality is that there are some things that the individual can't change or can't fix, can't think away. And, you know, this is something that we've talked about before that I really dislike about the self-help industry is this focus on the individual, which kind of lets everyone else off the hook. So, you know, there are a lot of issues in our society that deserve some attention and that we really need to reckon with. But instead of doing all of that work, we're just going to say, you know what? People just need to believe in themselves a little more. They just need to, you know, manifest more clearly what they want as opposed to, you know, there are certain realities in the world that need to be addressed.
They need to have faith over fear, Gene.
Mm-hmm.
I keep telling you this.
Yeah.
Every day I text Gene, I'm like, faith over fear today. Come on, let's do it.
Yeah. Well, and I can tell you, you know, with the whole law of attraction thing, like we experienced this quite clearly when Kirby died at James Ray's event. It was painful for people to acknowledge that James Ray, somebody that they really trusted and believed in, had taken their safety, taken their lives for granted, that he had put them in real danger, and that he could have been responsible for the awful thing that happened, which was that three people died. So instead of grapple with that reality, they use the law of attraction as a way to explain why people could have died. So people actually said things to us like, well, Kirby must have, you know, done something in a past life.
Oh, God.
Or
really?
They were actually, oh, yes. Oh, they actually wanted to die. They were having such a good time in the afterlife, death that this is what they actually wanted. And this is why she died. So this was a explanation that people were offering us, as in my family, to explain why Kirby died. I think it was also an explanation that people were latching onto for themselves because they didn't want to grapple with the reality that James Ray had just done something really egregious and awful. So,
oh gosh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would like the record to reflect that Gene Brown brought up James Arthur Ray on this episode of the Seek Safety podcast.
I
didn't even say his name. I wasn't going to say his name. I thought maybe I should lay off that bit.
I hadn't even remembered that when we first talked about, oh, let's talk about bypassing. But then as we were talking about it, I'm like, oh yeah, all those people said those crazy things, which was absolutely spiritual bypassing, you know, using this belief in the law of attraction to completely ignore a reality that they had experienced, that they had all gone through, but they didn't want to believe it. So instead they used this terminology and the language and the ideas of the law of attraction to explain what had happened.
You bet. The other thing two other things occur to me about the law of attraction as a magnificent bypass, a bypass superhighway in some ways. On the subject of spiritual bypassing, not only does a strong, comprehensive belief in the law of attraction bypass the necessity to kind of grapple with some painful realities of our world, some ugly realities of our world, it also bypasses the need to ask difficult questions about God and spirit. Right? Like, so anybody who has studied philosophy seriously has stumbled upon, you know, kind of these basic questions about the nature of God. Like, if there's a God who loves us and knows everything and can do anything he wants, then why do we have pain? Like, why do we have terrible tragedies? Why does Job in the book of Job, why is he having such a hard time? Right? My old philosophy teacher called that the Job dilemma, you know? And those aren't easy questions to resolve. And I would even make the argument that, I mean, our teeny tiny three-dimensional human minds may not even be terribly well equipped to grapple with those in a meaningful way. But the point is that, you know, at some point in spiritual development, so the self-help writer M. Scott Peck, who would probably turn over in his grave to know that I just called him a self-help writer. He was a psychiatrist. He was a really brilliant guy, but M. Scott Peck wrote about suffering and pain, and he wrote about, you know, the stages of spiritual development. And like when he talked about the stages of spiritual development, he says, you know, look, usually we start out at this very simplistic stage of spiritual development where God is kind of this big cop in the sky. And then we go through a stage of doubt and wrestling and pain. And we don't like that. Like we human beings don't like, we especially don't like it when we're thinking about God. We want God to be consistent and there and, you know, white beard. Like we want the, you know, our Father, we want that. So it's a large spiritual bypass around asking difficult questions of God. If you just believe in the law of attraction, like, well, okay, then I have an explanation for all this. Just my thoughts. Thoughts are things, right? And I just attracted everything. Kind of getting more secular. The other thing that the law of attraction allows us to bypass is a lot of work and uncertainty, I think.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this, like, you know, there are different versions of different nuances of the law of attraction, but the basic idea is thoughts are things that our mm-hmm. thoughts can impact the vibrations. Like our thoughts have vibrations and they vibrate at a frequency. You know, they can affect the vibrations around us. And eventually we can, if we're vibrating at the, if we want $1 million, we got to vibrate at the same frequency as $1 million. And then it can't help but make its way to us, right? What's missing from that equation is figuring out how to make $1 million. And I know that there, look, don't at me, guys. I know there are plenty of law of attraction teachers who say, look, you can't just sit and visualize it. You got to work for it. I know that. I'm talking about the concept itself. The concept itself is almost designed to be like, hey, you can't figure out how to make $1 million. Don't worry about it. You don't have to know how. In fact, a lot of teachers actually say that. Don't worry about the how. Just focus on the vibe. Focus on the end goal, etc. Not only is this conceptually this wonderful workaround, like, oh man, you're telling me I don't have to figure out how to make $1 million. This is fantastic. I can just sit here and visualize $1 million. And then eventually, because it's a law, it's a universal law, eventually it has to come to me. It also bypasses the necessity of asking difficult questions of why your business didn't work. You know, did I miscalculate the market? Is my product no good? Am I any good at this, right? We don't have to worry about any of those questions if the answer is, well, I just didn't have enough faith. My visualization wasn't clear enough. I must not have been vibrating on the same frequency as that $1 million.
Mm-hmm. And I think it also sets us up to not just not succeed because we're not putting in the effort, but then to really like take that on ourselves as, you know, oh God, like there just must be something really terribly wrong with me that I can't find the success that I want. No matter how much I think I want it, I just can't do it. And instead of, like you're saying, asking these tough questions and kind of, you know, analyzing the actions, we're just so focused on the thoughts and the ideas and, you know, our own mindset or whatever. I don't know. I think that's kind of a dangerous path to go down where people then just get into like a lot of self-loathing, I think, when things don't go the way that they're hoping them to go.
And we've always said, like, one of our biggest criticisms of the law of attraction has always been that it sets you up for self-loathing, that self-judgment, self-loathing, self-punishment, that just doesn't need to exist. It's not that I don't think it's ever appropriate to, you know, feel in some ways bad about ourselves. In fact, I think guilt can actually be a very useful emotion sometimes. That's why we don't have a bunch of sociopaths running around. Except that we do. But no, like it, but it's not necessary to go around blaming and judging and condemning ourselves and trying to punish ourselves for not believing hard enough to vibrate the $1 million. Into our mailbox. I can tell you that I read a book. So this was probably when I was a postdoc in like 2008 in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. And I'd read some book on the law of attraction. And they said, so if you tape a dollar bill to the inside of your mailbox, then the energy, the molecules in your mailbox will be vibrating to the tune of money. Cause it's right there. It's right there. You know, things influence the vibration of the things around them. So money will start arriving in your mailbox.
Your mailbox becomes a money magnet.
I did it, Jean. I can't clearly recall money ever arriving at my mailbox, but that was probably my fault. That was clearly mm-hmm. my fault.
Yeah.
Bypassing is a concept, again, that we see over and over again, like most of these self-help concepts. Guy, we were talking last time with Ann Peterson. And we were kind of chit-chatting about the stuff of Est and Werner Erhard and the you know, philosophies of Landmark Forum and stuff. And something that struck me was that, well, no, it's the same stuff. It's the same stuff that we've seen in various teachers and various systems. Like, again, something that we know about self-help is that these concepts come up over and over and over again. Bypassing is no different. Scott Peck, who I mentioned a minute ago, the author of The Road Less Traveled, one of my favorite self-help books, mind you. He talked about, he wrote a lot about this concept of human pain, like human pain and how do we understand it? And you know, like he took the Job dilemma on like square. He's like, you know, look, how do we wrestle with this? His conclusion was a bit of a spiritual bypass, in my opinion, because Peck arrived at the conclusion that, well, maybe the purpose of life is to grow. And maybe every painful experience forces us to grow. So maybe this reality, Earth, whatever, was designed by God to teach us things we need to know. Which again, it's a bypass to the tune of it offers a pat explanation that allows us to avoid thorny questions of why would God hurt me? Well, here's why God would hurt you. He loves you. He wants you to grow. We see this entrenched in, I mean, people who know me know I'm a big religious and Catholic history buff. Like we see this entrenched in the stories of the saints of, you know, God sends his greatest trials to his strongest soldiers, the saints. Like, you know, if God seems to be punishing you, that's because he loves you. Not only is it a bypass of asking thorny questions about, this God that loves us, what's up with this? It's also kind of this weird, maybe gaslighty kind of thing of, so I'm experiencing terrible pain. This means love. This means ultimate love. I am so loved because guess what? I'm in so much pain. I must be so loved. This is exactly the kind of psychology that many cults and many abusive relationships end up in. But spiritual bypassing, the law of attraction, not the only example of bypassing. You know, something that I think about a lot. So again, I work with trauma survivors. We're all survivors working our recovery one day at a time. The trauma work space is chock full of supposed opportunities to bypass the pain of processing and resolving trauma. And I'll be the first to admit, the field of trauma treatment and trauma psychology is not perfect. We have not figured everything out. You know, we think we figured out a few things, but what we figured out in trauma treatment pales in comparison to everything that we've not figured out. That said, it seems that trauma in particular is the kind of thing that a lot of gurus, a lot of organizations, programs approach and say, look, we can take away this pain. We can take away these symptoms. We can take away this, you know, but without the necessity of like, you know, those therapy guys, they want you to sit in a room and actually talk about your trauma. Who wants to do that? Ugh. They want you to feel your feelings. What the hell is up with that? That's just big therapy trying to get your money. We have, and then they give their pitch. So there are some, and some of them are even kind of based in therapy. So a lot of people might be familiar with EMDR, eye movement desensitization and reprocessing. It's a therapy technique. There is a trope about it, a belief about it, that it's a less verbal type of trauma processing that involves either, you know, bilateral stimulation, like sometimes you do it with what are called therotappers, these things that you hold and stimulate your hands back and forth. Sometimes it's done with light. I got trained in EMDR, going on 8 years ago now. And anybody actually trained in EMDR knows that EMDR, the technique itself, it's actually a tool in a larger treatment approach for trauma. Like actual EMDR therapy, no one's actually going to say, well, don't worry about talking about your trauma. Just do the flashy light thing and you're fine.
Right. It's not a whole treatment on its own. It's a tool in a treatment.
Exactly.
Program. Yeah.
And if you do therapy treatment and EMDR is part of it, I'm going to spoil the suspense. You're going to be doing a lot of talking about your therapy or about your trauma. You're going to be doing a lot of talking about your trauma. That said, there's a belief sometimes it's marketed as, well, look, like, you know, this is a way to non or less verbally kind of deal with your trauma. It's not. There's another approach. There are all these somatic experiencing approaches.
Mm-hmm.
And mind you, trauma, look, the body keeps the score, right? I mean, you know, trauma does live in the body as well as in the nervous system and the mind. I mean, in the end, it's all the body, really. Like even the mind is the body. And lots of people have done lots of really great work with things like somatic psychotherapies, like Peter Levine, the psychologist Peter Levine is, you know, famous for, like, his whole idea of trauma processing was that, well, okay, so when animals out in the animal kingdom experience trauma, they go into like this freeze trauma response and they kind of shake and you know, they're frozen. What they need to do to release all of that energy is they need to kind of complete the action of like running away or fighting back or something like that. And people got to, so he wrote about this in a book, a very famous book titled Waking the Tiger by Peter Levine. And it's a really good book. Like, I highly recommend everybody interested in trauma read it. That said, it's possible to look at that approach or to read about that approach and think like, oh, all I really need to get past, I don't need to talk about my trauma. I don't need to process and resolve my trauma. What I actually need to do is remember to shake out of this.
Well, yeah. And I think we see tons of, you know, therapies or treatments within the self-help world that are offering this emotional bypassing. So, and you hear it when you hear people talk about like, oh, there's this thing and it's going to cure everything, right? It's going to fix all the things. So gosh, what's one I came across recently, like a cryotherapy type thing, jumping into cold water, doing like a cold water swim every day.
Oh yeah.
And it sounds like, you know, there is some science behind the impacts that it has on your nervous system in like a physiological way. But I think the problem is when people are offering these types of things, saying this is going to cure your trauma alone, like just that. All you have to do is this. You don't have to do the talk therapy that's going to last for years and years and years, and it's going to be so very painful. You don't have to do all of these other things that are going to be harder to deal with. You can just do this thing, and this is going to work, and this will be fine.
You bet. The reason why we care about this, especially in the trauma space, is not just because the co-host of this podcast is Glenn Patrick Doyle. It is also because that, you know, we did an episode while back about trauma and Teal Swan. And in that episode, we talked a lot about how trauma survivors are vulnerable to manipulation and exploitation from the self-help industry. And there are lots of reasons for that. And they're valid reasons. Trauma survivors have often been not well served by the mental health establishment. Mental health, psychotherapy, the psychotherapy field. I tweet stuff like this and then other therapists yell at me like, how dare you? No, look, I'm a therapist and I love doing therapy. I think therapy can be an amazing tool for some people at the right time. It's definitely not the panacea that some therapists seem to think it is. The mental health field and the psychotherapy industry has not served trauma survivors particularly well. I mean, it was only in the 90s, really, realistically, it was really only in the 90s that we started talking meaningfully about complex trauma when Judy Herman came along with trauma and trauma and recovery. Anyway, my point is that because the mental health field, my field, has not served trauma survivors well and still doesn't in a lot of ways, the self-help world happily steps in. When you have James Arthur Ray, that time I brought him up, when you have James Arthur Ray talking about, like, making part of his pitch for his online, for his Zoom events, as he did, heal your trauma. Like, we know something has gone wrong. We know that it's something that so many people struggle with and suffer with and really want meaningful answers to. Like, it reminds me of it's the quote from the movie The American President, where, you know, Michael J. Fox is telling Michael Douglas that, you know, look, people want, and he's talking about leadership. He says, people want leadership so badly, they'll crawl across the desert toward a mirage. And then when there's nothing there, they'll drink the sand. And that's, I think, the way that a lot of trauma survivors feel about, like, effective understanding and relief of their trauma. It makes us very vulnerable to the self-help ecosystem.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I'll put this out there on the flip side of it as a positive for the self-help world. I think part of what you said early on there was that some things work for some people and don't work for other people. And then there might be something else that will work for them. And so I think sometimes we see these different kinds of treatments or therapies that are offered in the self-help space, and they might actually be really great for certain people. Like meditating might work really well for some people, or yoga might do really amazing things for some people. Cryotherapy might be fantastic for some people. I guess what we want to caution people to think about is that in all likelihood, especially if you're dealing with some heavy trauma or, you know, you're dealing with some heavy stuff, chances are none of these is going to be the one single answer that's going to fix you and going to be great for you. And I would be very, very careful about entrusting, you know, your treatment and your healing to somebody who doesn't really have a background in dealing with trauma. But you might find that, you know, in combination with other treatments, doing some of these other things, going to a yoga class on a regular basis might be really beneficial for you. It's kind of like learning styles. I think everybody has a different learning style. Maybe people have different healing styles, right?
You bet. You bet. You know, I got yelled at off mic by Ann Peterson the other night because we were talking about Teal Swan.
Mm-hmm.
And I told her, and she's had some harsh words for Teal Swan, and I told her, I'm like, I mean, look, I know just problems there. Yes, problems. That said, I always kind of had a soft spot for Teal. You know, she's a trauma survivor and whatever. But the other thing is, like, what I know of how Teal Swan works, I don't hate everything she says. I hate some of, you know, I'm not nuts about some of the ways that she does business. But I will say about Teal Swan, boy, we're going to get ratioed on this podcast. A lot of the things that I understand she offers, like, again, I don't have a comprehensive understanding of what she does. My understanding, based on podcasts and the Deep End documentary and the Gateway podcast, excellent podcast by our friend of the pod, Jennings Brown, who wrote that article on Steve Maraboli that I sent you, we got to talk about later. Mm-hmm. Anyway, stay tuned. Yep. Preview of coming attractions, guys. Do not forward Steve Maraboli quotes on social media. Don't do it. Anyway, my understanding of what Teal does is actually pretty light on the spiritual bypassing, which is interesting because you would kind of expect her to be the queen of spiritual bypassing. What she tends to offer, from my understanding, again, what I know is, you know, tools and a philosophy and a perspective on actually processing trauma. And that's really what, and again, I'm not saying it's ideal. I'm not saying it's great. I am not nuts about her doing it specifically with lack of safety guardrails and credentials. And yeah, problematic. I get it. I'm talking about the technique itself. Really what we can say, you know, just in general is when it comes to trauma, when it comes to anything, if a guru, an organization, a program is promising you a shortcut around that hard work, whatever that hard work is, if that hard work is processing trauma, if that hard work is building a business, like whatever it is, that should be kind of a flag that goes up. Like, is this bypass? Would Dr. Doyle say this is bypassing bullshit? Would he? Is that what he would say?
Exactly. Yeah. And that's it. I think it's that caution of when you see someone offering something that is going to completely let you off the hook for doing the hard work. That's definitely a red flag. Even if that thing that they're offering might end up being beneficial or useful for you, chances are it's not going to be the only thing that you need. And so you shouldn't just be entrusting all of your recovery, all of your healing, all of your growth to that one person and that one thing.
You bet. You bet. You know, the when we talk about bypassing, you know, an interesting question that gets raised is, so the 12-step tradition, like Alcoholics Anonymous, is that a bit of a spiritual bypass? It's an interesting question because a big part of 12-step is this idea that, well, we are powerless over our addiction, Therefore, we are going to turn it over to our higher power. I mean, talk about, like, it sounds like a spiritual bypass, right? Like, it sounds like, oh, okay, like, I'm just going to turn it over to God. It'll be fine. In fact, I have to, like, in the AA version, it's like, well, that's the only way out of addiction is by turning it over to your higher power. Like, the more you try to handle it, the worse it's going to get. My experience with 12-step is that even though, yeah, I get it, that piece sounds a bit like pretty bypassy. That said, when you really look at what happens in 12-step recovery, you know, folks come into meetings and they talk about their lives and they talk about their problems and they get a sponsor, like they have relationships with their sponsor that are supportive and safe. And like the actual stuff of 12-step recovery in practice actually comes face to face with a lot of hard stuff. Like if you go into a 12-step meeting, I hear people not trying to bypass anything. Like they're trying to, you know, if they're honestly working their recovery, they're trying to hit it head on. I feel that same way about, I mean, my approach to, as everyone knows, my approach to trauma recovery is heavily influenced by addiction recovery. Same way. Like people who are in trauma recovery, realistic, sustainable trauma recovery, are not trying to bypass anything. You know, we are kind of hitting our past and our fears and our feelings and our memories kind of head on. In good recovery, in safe, realistic, sustainable recovery, we're also developing skills and tools to make that possible and stay stable and stay safe, right? But actual growth doesn't bypass anything. So again, if we, you know, if you're out there in the self-help landscape, the personal growth landscape, and somebody's pitch is, yeah, man, like it's a myth that you've got to do that work. Like I will teach you to do the thing. I will give you the shortcut, that puts you on the bullet train. That's the red flag. That's the flag.
Yeah, exactly. I think the effect of problematic bypassing is that it reduces everything. It makes everything pretty shallow. So, you know, it kind of reduces complex realities and complex issues into very simple and shallow thoughts. So like you're saying with 12-step, yeah, there might be this idea of kind of letting go, like releasing some control to a higher power, but it doesn't let people completely off the hook to then, you know, completely ignore harm they've caused or, you know, things that they're dealing with. Like it still encourages people to go into all of that. So in that sense, I think it's not the kind of problematic bypassing that we're talking about, because it's not, not reducing everything into this one concept. I think the real problematic bypassing is it makes everything very shallow.
Well, it's interesting too, because in 12 step, you get to like, okay, I admitted I was powerless. I turned it over to God. And that's it, right? No. That's step three. There are many more steps.
Exactly. There's more.
In fact, right after that, I think it's the fourth step. Somebody can correct me on that. I think it's step four. Is no. Then you make what's called a moral inventory. It's basically you turn back and you look at yourself, and then you go on like you cop to all of your stuff and then you go and you make amends, right? Like, and you can all this stuff. So I always thought that was funny. It's like, yeah, man, we turned it over to God. We're good, right? Oh no. Right. Here we go. You know, I was thinking about, you know, since you insist on talking about James Arthur Ray, every podcast.
I know.
Guy.
Oh my God.
I love telling the story about how James tells the story. He's got versions of this story too. So James doesn't have credentials. He has zero credentials. His credential, James Arthur Ray's credential to tell anybody how to live their life, is he was on Oprah a couple times. That's his credential. He does an end run around this issue of credentials by, again, this is the story that he tells. I think it's in the foreword to his best-selling book, Harmonic Wealth. He has this wonderful little story about how he visited the Holy Land And he went, I swear, you're going to think I'm making this up. I'm not. He tells a story about how he went up Mount Sinai, you know, Mount Sinai, like 10 commandments.
Like the Mount Sinai. Yeah.
And he spent overnight in the cave where supposedly Moses received the 10 commandments. And that's where he was gifted with the inspiration to write Harmonic Wealth. He, you know, God literally gave it to him on Mount Sinai. James Arthur Ray is Moses 2.0. Book it. I love it. He has another story that he tells, like, so a couple of years ago now, he was, James was offering an online course about like the ancient secrets of, I think it was like the Mayans or the Toltecs or something like that. And he told the story about how one day in the mail, he got this mysterious envelope and it had no return address. And he opened up the envelope and it said, go to this URL. This is kind of a techie spin on the Mount Sinai thing, but now this mysterious letter said, go to this URL. So he went to this URL. I love it. He has no concerns about whether it's malware or anything. It just goes. And there he learned the secrets of the Toltecs, you know, the whole thing. Both of these stories have in common are James was gifted with knowledge from some spiritual source, whether it's God on Mount Sinai, whether it's the mysterious sender of the envelope, who knows? It allows him to bypass these thorny questions of who are you to tell me how to do anything? It's this idea, and so many gurus do this. They kind of use as their credential. We've talked about this a lot. You know, they kind of use as their credential, look what I did. Like, I built a business. I did, you know, whatever. And that becomes their credential, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or I lived through a hard thing.
Yeah.
And that becomes their credential.
You bet.
Yeah.
Note that I lived through a hard thing. That is part of my story that everybody knows. I then went on and got the thing. I got the doctorate. I did.
Right. And it's all a, you know, it's okay for somebody to tell their story in the sense of, here's what I did. Here's what happened to me. Here's what I did. Here's how I dealt with it. I hope that by telling you this story, it might help you with whatever you're going through. I think that's fine. It's when I dealt with this, now therefore I am qualified to tell you how to deal with yours.
You bet.
There's a difference.
It bypasses the really important question of really epistemology. Epistemology is the branch of philosophy that deals with how do we know what we know? It bypasses kind of this whole thing. I went through a hard time, or I was given these commandments, these ideas on Mount Sinai. It bypasses the question, the epistemological question of how do you know what you know? Did you go to school? Did you, you know, Did you apprentice in a tradition? Like did you have a mentor even? I really love the story about how James for years was saying that he had been trained by like shaman in Peru and he had a mentor. It turns out the mentor was a tour guide that he once went on like a tour of Machu Picchu. Fantastic. But the point is, that too is bypassing. It's bypassing those thorny questions. And he's asking his audience to buy into that bypassing as well. I'm going to say that any teacher, guru, therapist, even, who is going to tell you, you know, look, like, don't look behind the curtain. Don't worry about it. Red flag for, you know, bypassing is afoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
There are examples, for what it's worth, there are examples of bypassing, I mean, look, in actual psychology. Like, I'm going to go on my brief mini rant about so many DSM diagnoses. I'm not anti-diagnosis. Nobody get on Twitter and tell me that I'm anti-psychiatry, anti-diagnosis. I'm not. I believe in diagnosis. It can be a useful tool. It's a necessary tool in the current environment. Yes. That said, I defy you to show me with the exception of post-traumatic disorders, show me many, anyway, diagnoses that add to our understanding of what's actually going on. I'll take, for example, personality disorders. I can say this person has borderline personality disorder because blah, 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 right? They do this, they do this, they do this, right? They fit the criteria for borderline personality
disorder. They display these, yeah.
You bet. So I can describe them as borderline. it then doesn't work to turn around and say, oh, well, why do they do blah, blah, blah? Well, because mm-hmm. they're borderline. Keep up. Mm-hmm, well, how do you know they're borderline? Mm-hmm. They do blah, blah, blah. Well, why do they do that? Because they're borderline. It gets circular, right? So many DSM diagnoses are descriptors. Like they don't speak to what we call etiology, you know, where this disorder comes from. Like, we've got theories, we've got loads of theories about, but just the diagnosis itself is a form of bypassing. You will very frequently see, and you see it everywhere, and unfortunately, you do see it in medical and psychiatric settings. You're like, well, why do they do that? Well, they're borderline. They're borderline. That's why they do that, right? That's an information-free statement. It bypasses the thorny question of why they do that. Right now, one of the big conversations in my field of trauma psychology is, what's the difference between borderline personality disorder and complex traumatic stress disorder? Because we know for a fact that many people who have been diagnosed as borderline, and yes, who meet the criteria as laid out in the DSM for borderline personality disorder, we know that they're actually complex trauma people. We know that when they work a trauma recovery, it's not that they had this personality disorder, that their personality was disordered. It was something inside them. To hear people talk about personality disorders, you'd think there was something growing inside them called borderline personality. It's not. You know, when they resolve trauma, suddenly they don't look like borderlines anymore. Weird that. The point is that bypassing is kind of a rampant. It's not just limited to self-help. And the fact that a medical provider, you know, told you you had something, you know, like, take a closer look. Again, it's not that. Again, I don't think there's a widespread thing of you know, medical providers trying to gaslight anybody into thinking that they have a thing that they may not have. All I'm saying is that, look, bypassing is everywhere. And once we kind of get used to looking for it and asking questions about, like, is this label or is this concept enabling me or anybody to trying to advertising that's going to enable me or anybody to bypass the tough questions of, what is this all about? You know, what do I really have to do here? That's a flag. Bypassing is afoot.
Yep. Yep. Well, Glenn, thank you for chatting about this with me. Yeah, it's kind of a tricky thing to talk about, but we thought it would be worthwhile because I think we do see a lot of people talking about it. We thought it would be useful to kind of try to explain what it is and how to recognize it and when to just say, okay, this sounds a little like bypassing, but it's probably fine and pretty harmless. And when to say, okay, this might be a bit of a red flag and I need to just be a little bit on guard here. Yeah. So hopefully we have illuminated this a little bit for people. But before we wrap up, Dr. Glenn, you also had some shout outs that you wanted to make.
I have some shout outs, Jean. I love shouting people out. So as y'all know, I know a lot of people in Texas these days. Y'all. And so
as a New Yorker, it's like I can't even get it out of my mouth.
I feel like
it's very uncomfortable for me.
I don't know if it's cultural appropriation. I'm a kid from Iowa who lives in Chicago. I don't know if I can say y'all.
I'm just like, hey, you guys. And then people are like, I can't do the y'all.
'Twas my birthday. And every year I ask folks to consider for my birthday making a donation to our organization Seek Safely. These days, most of those funds go to produce this very podcast that you're listening to. And I said, so I had my fundraiser up for a few days, and I said, hey guys, if we hit the goal, if we hit 2,000 clambos, I'll go ahead and I'll just shout out everybody who donated. And we did.
Amazing. We
totally hit 2,000 clambos. So instead of just giving like a blanket, Gene just watched me put on my reading glasses.
This the glasses.
Oh, God.
They're cute. I like them.
Oh, boy. So anyway, I wanted to give a shout out. I'm going to shout out the people. So it was a Facebook fundraiser. I know there are people who donated on Instagram. As I'm looking at Instagram, many of folks' Instagram names are wacky. And
yeah, Instagram makes it kind of hard to tell who is who.
So
we love you all, and we're grateful to all of you.
We do. Yeah. We do. So I'm going to stick with the Facebook donors. And they were as follows. Dr. Jamie Caballero, one of my best friends. Thank you, Jamie. Megan Dollarhide from Texas. Y'all. Dude, y'all. Chantel Incandela. Love her to death. She's an opera nerd. Carolyn Myers from Iowa. Britt Barkholtz, the caffeinated therapist. Andy Kilborn, he and I used to run marathons together. Sherry Nuss, Cindy Santana, Sherry Ann, Kylie Louise, Lauren Hughes, Crystal Page, Sherry Henkel, Gwen Weinblatt, Barbara Zito, Tracy Johnson Hernandez, Michelle Sickman, Christina Mick. Oh, I'm gonna get this wrong. Mick Ackham. Ackham? I'm so sorry, Christina. You know who you are. I'm sorry. Joy Thompson. Donna Lynn Burnell, Laura Langenberg, Wendy Lynn Rabo Rosen, Melissa Martian, Me Einsel. Boy, I said the Instagram names were wacky. I'm just butchering these. I'm so sorry, guys. You were so nice to contribute to my fundraiser. I have no idea how to say some of these names. Wendy Potter, that's a good one. Kelly O'Brien, which is about the most Irish name I can think of this side of Glenn Patrick Doyle. Michelle Ray Heim, Sheila Trafton, Diane D'Angelo, Megan Wiseman, Wendy, all of us, and Vicki Tippins. Thank you all so much.
Amazing. For your donations. Thank you, everybody, so much. Yes.
We love y'all. We will be back here probably the week after next with another conversation.
Yes.
About self-help.
So thank you, everyone.
Red flags. If you loved this podcast, go on over to Apple Podcasts. Give us a 5-star rating. Give us a review even. And if you hated the podcast, just forget I said anything. If you hated the podcast, we are sponsored by the James Arthur Ray podcast. So head on over and give him a terrible review. No. We will see y'all later, guys.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Dr. Glenn, for chatting. And thank you for Makushla for quieting down. After just a few minutes, she settled in.
Ciao, ciao.
All right. Take care.
Thanks for listening to this episode. We hope that you have found it enlightening, and we'd be so, so grateful if you'd share it with the seekers in your life. We all know at least one, right? Until our next episode, you can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at Seek Safely. Connect with Dr. Glenn Patrick Doyle at Dr. Doyle Says, and me, Jean, at Jean C. Brown on Twitter. Feel free to send us an email, info@seeksafely.org. To support Seek Safely, you can make a secure donation on our website, seeksafely.org/donate. The Seek Safely podcast is produced by Citizens of Sound.